Hello everyone, and thanks so much for tuning into Questions That Need Answers, CNBC TV18's parenting podcast. I'm Manisha Natarajan, your host, a parent of two teenagers, a son who's 16 and a daughter aged 13. Right now, my husband and I are feeling the pressure build up, especially for our older one who is now in grade 11. You know, just about every parent around us is discussing their children's grades, performance, college options, and future career. What do? Well, we swing between being very relaxed, chilled out parents, telling ourselves, let's not hyperventilate, let's just be there for the fellow, support him in his choices, and see where he ends up. But that feeling disappears, and we get tied up in knots of worry whenever we meet an alpha parent. I mean, there are enough and more around us. They've got it all chalked out for their kids. Psychometric tests are done, career counseling sessions are on, SAT, CLAT, JE preps have begun, and a tentative list of courses and colleges are sometimes all drawn up. Are we too relaxed? Are we too late? Should we be chilling less and scouting more for colleges? Should we be meeting counselors and getting our son to coaching centers for competitive exams? Well, our list of questions is endless. Where do we begin and how do we go about it all? So I've sought out Naveen Chopra, the chairman of the Chopras, India's leading career and education counseling firm. Mr. Chopra is a pioneer in his field. He has led the Change in Indian Schools campaigning for them to introduce career planning for senior school students. So who better than him to put my anxiety to rest with some straight, hard-hitting answers? Thank you, Naveen, for being part of CNBC TV18 Parenting Podcast.
Thank you, Manisha, and thank you everyone who's listening in, and hello to all of you.
Let me begin with my own anxiety question. So, as you heard me say, our son is midway through class 11th. So far, we haven't even started any spade work on courses or colleges that he should consider. Do you think we're too late?
Manisha, I'm going to give a bit of a shock to you and the listeners in making the statement that right now we are facing a tectonic shift between centuries. The advent and coming at supersonic speed of artificial intelligence and digitization is creating a situation where 800 million plus jobs are going to vanish in the next 5 to 7 years, as per some projections that have been made. There is a counter projection that there will be 130 odd million jobs created, but that still leaves a deficit of almost 650 or 700 million. You are living in a time where it is entirely possible for students to go into college, enter a course or a program of study, thinking that there will be great jobs at the end of the course and undergrad program, and find that those jobs are gone. I have been talking about these since 96, in actual fact, the same story, same facts, but it's now become an absolute living reality. So no, it's never too late. And I really think that the first thing and foremost thing that we need to work with our children who are in school is to help them sit from early years, remain lateral thinkers and not become linear thinkers. To remain active and to take pride and joy first, of becoming 100%ers, in the sense that we know for a fact that most human beings use only about 4% of their brain capacity. There are 100 billion neurons in our brains, and the neural connections that are made in amongst these are more than the stars in the galaxy, but we use only 4% of that. The times that have come at us now, irrevocably so, are going to require each human being to use far more of this brain capacity and thinking capacity than they have ever used. In my life, I have seen this across continents. I've lived and worked in the US, in Canada, in England, in New Zealand, in Australia, and of course here in India. And I have found that every single time a child comes from a loving family where parents are obviously loving each other, there are lots of hugs, there are lots of laughs, there are lots of kisses, and the child is getting that environment, his emotional quotient EQ is all sorted out and the child is stable, and that fires up the IQ, and such children are inevitably bright. The disturbances happen when there are disturbances within the family itself. So these fundamentals are not going to change, no matter what the setting, whether it's the 21st century or the 22nd century. These are fundamentals we need to look at.
Okay.
At a philosophical level, yes, everything that you said resonates with us, and it's a very important conversation that parents need to pay heed to, that early years and the family environment and family responsibility, parenting responsibility can't be taken away. But I'm going to, I know it is for my own purpose, but drag you back into the conversation of preparing our children for college and careers. You know, every year the Chopras is helping thousands of children to find the right course, right college, probably in India or abroad. Both are open to them. Let me start with a very basic question. How do you even begin to decide whether you should study in India or go abroad? So I'm going to again use my own example, because I'm in the thick of action right now. We'd taken an informed decision, my husband, I and my son, that he should do his undergraduate in India and then go for post-graduation to any place. He would also know his mind better. He would know what he wants to pursue. Once he's come to class 11th, somebody who was convinced about that idea is now beginning to revisit it. Is it peer pressure? I don't know. Or is it the fear that despite the fact that he's bright, he may not make the cut in terms of marks for the top colleges of India?
I think it is both of these factors. It is the peer pressure, definitely, but it is also the fear factor. Because let's face it, that the despite the fact that there are lots of new universities, even private universities, I mean, even we are setting up one in Uttarakhand, the gap between the demand for quality education and the supply of quality education is still very, very, very big. So if he's not a 98%er, he's not going to get into St. Stephen's, for example. And why that should be so in this country is another debate. But the fact is that initial statement that you made, that, you know, study, do the undergrad studies in India and then go for postgrad, absolutely fine. There's nothing wrong with that. In fact, it works for a lot of kids. It's again a very individual thing, because studying overseas essentially in the first instance is a financial decision. In the second instance, it's a decision of maturity. Some children coming from very, very wealthy families who can afford it may not have the maturity of mind and thinking to be able to handle, for example, a US college, where I sometimes say going to the US and studying at undergrad is like taking a wire designed for 240 volts and passing 10,000 volts through it. It'll fuse.
I'm glad you say that.
A lot of people will fuse. Then on the other hand, there are a lot of people who don't. A lot of people come out and emerge from this hugely mature. If the child needs a lot of emotional caring and a lot of hand-holding, then yes, undergrad here. If the child is bright and can get into half a decent school here, yes, undergrad here. If you're looking at no, we want to give that global exposure because of the kind of world we are coming into, then there are any number of global destinations today. Our organization, for example, is sending students to 40 countries.
There are 40 countries?
40 countries that you can choose from.
And they all have better quality education than we do in India?
I mean, how do you define better quality? That's getting into a conversation that, in all honesty, there's a lot of very, very good stuff in Indian education. And what you called or described as rote learning, I realized a few years ago that it was this rote learning that in actual fact developed the ability to concentrate and have long attention spans in children, to the extent that the same kid coming from rote learning system goes overseas and becomes one of the brightest performers.
There is new evidence and scientific research which says that actually memorizing and rote learning also enhances the brain capacity tremendously. So yes, I mean, like you said, you can't dumb down any kind of education system. And so let's not go into the territory of which is better and which is not. We're going to talk about helping our child find the right courses and colleges to do. So let's talk about this decision that children are taking, we want to go outside of India and study. When do they begin the preparations? What is the process? What do they need to do? What do good foreign universities look at? Can you run us through some of those basics?
Sure. I mean, if you're looking at the United States largely, and of course there are other in Canada and other institutions in other parts of the world also, but if you're looking at the United States, you need to prepare for and sit the SATs or the Scholastic Aptitude Test. the SAT 1 and SAT 2 in many instances, if you're pitching for the Ivy League and so on. And this should be done under all circumstances as far as possible in year 11. That's the year when you have a bit of space. The marks that you obtain are not critical. It's a year you can spend time preparing and doing well. Because if you're aiming for either scholarships or for high-end universities, you need to really score very, very high in the top 1 or 2 percentile of the SAT scores. And Indian kids are capable of doing that. If you're looking at any of the other countries, most of them and most universities will not require the SATs. They will assess your candidature based entirely or almost entirely upon your past academic performance. Your year 10 marks would be critical, and then what you achieve in year 12. There's a lot of children and schools, in fact, and parents who have fallen into this narrative of, let the child do what he or she likes. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that. But I have a question that I pose all of you school principals and counselors and parents and indeed the students. Does life always come along in dollops that you like?
Mostly it doesn't.
So now if you train your mind to do only what it likes, how are you going to handle life when it comes along in a way that you don't like? So my point of asking this question is that when a human being or a child, decides to tackle something that he or she doesn't like and does it well, that person has trained his or her mind to cope with almost anything that life can throw at you. So I have had this conversation with children who wanted to give up maths, for example, after year 10 and year 11. And I was fortunate that they had conversations with me in year 10 as they were graduating. So far, I can tell you that not one single child that I know of has, after having a conversation with me, given up maths. Because what I tell them is that maths is not about the pluses and minuses and equations. Maths is all about mind training. You cannot do maths without concentrating and without focusing. And if you don't want to do maths, it's because you have an emotional dislike for it. It's not that you can't do maths. If you really set your mind to it, you can do maths, you can do anything. And in today's world, really speaking, that's what it is all about. You have to train your mind to do anything.
You're right about how quickly children give up on difficult things and want the easy way out. And how important it is for them to excel at what they don't like, which will enable them to then handle life. I mean, this has been a fantastic part of your conversation. Let me come to the next question. Again, just steps that you need to take to get into the right foreign university. I feel that at this moment, the choices are so many, they're very bewildering. So if you know you want to become an engineer or a doctor, you want to do biochemistry, or you want to do law, the path is easier. What happens when the child is not very clear about what he or she wants to do?
Okay.
Should we give them more time to be able to make up, but then there's also this pressure that after 12th, what do you do?
Unfortunately, they don't have time. In actual fact, if the reality be known, they don't have time because time runs out very, very quickly. I think the one thing that should be kept in mind by everybody is that at undergraduate study level, indeed at high school study level, the basic aim should be to create for yourself or develop for yourself the strongest possible foundation that you can develop, from which you can build multiple narratives. So for example, between Bachelor of Commerce and Economics, which is the better foundation building course? Manisha, would you like to answer that?
Between Bachelor of Commerce and Bachelor of Economics,
which one builds a better foundation?
Personally, I chose economics and I find myself very equipped to understand multiple things.
Right. So economics is the stronger foundation building course for the simple reason that everything that you can do from the Bachelor of Commerce, you can do with economics, but the extra stuff that you can do from the economics background, you can't do from the commerce background. Commerce comes out of economics.
That's interesting.
Not vice versa. Similarly, anybody or any child who has decided for himself or herself that he would like to take maths or likes maths, there's nothing to beat it. Simply put, because A, of course, he develops his mental strength, because you can't do well in maths without developing concentration and long attention spans, but also because applied mathematics is physics, applied physics is chemistry, and applied chemistry is life, the biosciences. Now, no one told me this when I was growing up. I wish somebody had, because I might have chosen maths as my career point at that time. So anyone who takes sciences or engineering, frankly speaking, is unbeatable, because you can do art, you can sing, you can dance, you can do humanities, you can do anything from a science background, because science makes you a lateral thinker, it makes you a logical thinker, it develops your mind capacity. Having said that, there are people who will say, oh, come on, this guy is talking rubbish. I mean, there are so many people who have not done maths or sciences who are doing well in life. Yes, of course, that is true. But even there, if you dig deeper, you will find that they would have, by and large, unless they're extremely talented in got a great voice, great actors or actresses, Priyanka Chopra, you will find that most of these people have done a strong foundation building course. So if it's not a science background course, so it'll be economics, English literature, history. History builds fantastic foundations. No one realizes that. If history is read well, within history, you've got political science, you've got social studies, you've got economics, you've got warfare, and from these kinds of strong, English literature. English literature is very strong because it builds your communication skills, it builds your vocabulary, it fires up your imagination. Again, it's a strong foundation building program. So there are lots of strong foundation building programs. The one thing that should be completely avoided, as far as I'm personally concerned, is to go into these passing fad courses at the early stages of your academic life.
So you talked about SAT scores, and you said, look, you have to crack pretty much the top percentile.
If you want the scholarships or, the top universities. I mean, you can get a decent university for lower scores. It's not that you can't.
Okay. And it should be done in class 11th, because it
ideally it should be done
in class 11th.
Yeah.
What about extracurricular activities, community services,
yes,
your essays?
Yes.
I mean...
Yes. The US education system, they will look at all of those things. In most of the other world, they will not. This is how it is. Most of the other rest of the world judges on the basis of your past academic performance, but the US will look at you holistically. If you're doing social work, if you play the guitar, if you're a great sports person in any kind of sport, they will look at you multidimensionally, and often you will gain that advantage from another kid who's at the same level academically as you are, but does not have these overall personality development, personality building.
Okay. How would you recommend that parents help their kids prepare a list of colleges and shortlist even countries to go to? Because like you said, there are 40 countries, 40 plus countries you can study in. Do you necessarily need to go to a counselor, because they know all the options and they can help you figure out more?
Look, the Google God has got all the information that you can possibly want. But the question is, how many minds do you know, even including in your schools, when you talk of your teachers and principals and so on, whose minds are wired in a way where they can really make sense of all that information that is out there? So how do you choose is to simplify it. First of all, get to know your child, and to the child I would say, get to know yourself. I used to, when I was doing these generic seminars, or when I do these generic seminars in schools, say to them that, look, draw a line down the middle of a blank page, say my strengths and my weaknesses, and start writing down all your strengths, and be very honest and write down all your weaknesses. Now, psychometric profiling will help that analysis. We also as an organization do psychometric profiling, but it's not the gospel. It's not something that, you know, whatever the psychometric profile says is the way it is going to be, because let's face it, these profiles can be gamed, and often are gamed by students who are trying to outguess the profile. But they are excellent tools to start a discussion within the family, indeed with the child himself or herself in her own head, and within the school. Once you've arrived at that profile of, you know, and then the second question is, what is it that you want to do with your life? Or, you know, what kind of a career do you want to have? Now, remember something. This is something that not many people have said, and despite my having said this from 96 onwards, that choosing a career is choosing a lifestyle. So please think about, what lifestyle are you looking for? So a lawyer has a distinct lifestyle from that of a chartered accountant, who has a distinct lifestyle, that's that of a businessman, who has a distinct lifestyle different from that of a hotel management person, distinctly different from that of an airline person. So each career choice is a lifestyle choice. Universities, in my view, always, I have maintained this and I still do, should be chosen on the basis of the course and the teacher. What makes for a great education? it's the course and the teacher.
And not the rankings.
Not the ranking. The rankings can be influenced, and rankings make no sense unless you deep dive into the methodology of the ranking. If you look at the methodologies of the rankings, only then will you be able to put context to that ranking. So you take five different rankings. So for example, you take Times Higher, you take the QS, you take the Xinjiang, so on. For the same university or the same course, they will give you five different results. Why is that? On numerous of these rankings, you will find even universities like Oxford and Cambridge may be coming in at 28 or 30. Does that mean that if you get into Oxford or Cambridge, you will not go there? I mean, that's crazy. So universities that have been existing and have been around for 150, 200, 300 years, surely they've got something going for them. Look at the course contents, because even though a course is batched by the same name, the course contents or the course modules will vary. And look at the teachers. There, you have a situation truly, and all of us have experiences.
I agree, but so, how easy is it to find out the, you know, how interesting the teachers are, what the body of their work is? Is a particular course led by great educators in particular universities?
Very fair question. I mean, you either spend a lot of your own time deep diving into these issues and looking at the background of the teachers and talking to them, or now there are a number of organizations, ours included, where you can whose information pool also you can tap into. And finally, I mean, I think that if you have the wherewithal, if you have shortlisted your 4 or 5 universities, and you know, maybe once you've shortlisted it in your summer vacations, go down there and visit the universities and see for yourself.
So you do recommend that?
I've always recommended it.
The return on investment now on foreign education, especially America, where suddenly there seems to be a clampdown on children staying back, and unless you have excelled, have been in an Ivy League, probably have done a STEM course, jobs are just not there. You're pretty much coming back to your own country, and I've seen the disappointment writ large on children's faces when they have to come back and get into the same pool and take up a job in Deloitte or a EY at the same starting salary as a person at SRCC gets in,
yep,
right?
Yep.
It's heartbreaking.
Yes.
So should we even look at going abroad and studying as an investment to be recuperated through a job? Or do we just let go of that idea and say, hey, we're going to do that for our children and as parents for good quality education?
Insofar as the attendant story to this is concerned, it is that ideally, when you are studying overseas, look for courses that have sandwich years, which means that you are able to gain at least a year's experience in placements in real firms. Secondly, look for courses that have internships built into them, again, so that you get some experience. And thirdly, look at courses where the countries that you're going to allow you to work after you have finished your program for a couple of years. Because if you come back to your home country after having worked overseas for 2 or 3 years, you will definitely get value add.
All right. Scholarships. Very hard, rare, or not that difficult to crack?
America's biggest pool of scholarship by far. You know, and all other countries do have certain number of scholarships. Not too many at the undergrad level, more at the postgrad level. And if cost is a factor, then you should look at countries that are more cost effective. So, for example, Germany has got fantastic education, especially if you're going into technical education or finance, economics and so on. Learn German. I have been saying this again since 96. I keep referring to that year. To all the children that I have personally counseled, that if you want to get ahead and a jump over all the other peer group that you have, start learning languages. Learn another language.
Wow, I mean, today's conversation has taken away a lot of my anxiousness and, of course, also given me some sort of path now to proceed and have a dialogue with my own son. Thank you, Naveen Chopra, for speaking to CNBC TV18 and joining us for this podcast.
You're very welcome, and I hope that the thinking horizon of the your listeners has expanded a bit.
Absolutely, I'm hoping as
Thank
well.
You.
Very useful podcast.
Thank you. It was fun.
I'm going to tell all you listeners, please write in to us at parenting@nw18.com. I had come with a specific set of questions. Some of those have got answered, but I've got a lot more out of this conversation with Mr. Chopra than what I set out myself for. Similarly, I don't know whether I've covered all your questions, so why not send them in and I'll make sure I'll get you some of the best experts in India to answer them. Happy parenting. Spend a day not talking about grades, not talking about exams, not talking about careers, just having fun with your child.
Excellent. Goodbye.